Well, you got a new release out, David, and it's a 5-CD release. And talk about this new album that you have just come out with.
Well, it's kind of a celebration, I guess you could say, of our history and where we've been for the past, whatever it's been, 30-some odd years. And it gives an indication of where we were, where we're going, and it's the shapes of things to come. I wouldn't say that every track on there, you know, we're going to do more of that in on the next records, per se. But, it's like, the Ghost One, the Disc One, the Black Wine for Mourning. That's like the main focus for a lot of people, because that's all the latest stuff. Most of that was written just within the past like 2 months before I had to deliver the record. I actually started doing what became Gothic Voodoo Anthems and the second disc, the Red Wine for Warning record, first. And then I was like, well, I think I want to make a little more of a balance in the other direction. So I started writing things like Seven Dead Within, Psychic Slaughter, and kind of tip the scales to the the more the metallic side, and I think now it's pretty versatile and well balanced. the three discs, and of course you got all the metal stuff from Book of Burning and the Hymns to Victory record. So I think right now it's pretty versatile and well balanced, and there's a little bit of all that we've been thinking about over the past year. There's the live kind of stuff. The Gothic Voodoo was done. All that was recorded live, and then went back in and did some more orchestration later on with that. And we try to keep that philosophy with the other two records as well. That's sort of, keep it pretty raw and just go for it and move on. Because the next two, we just put out this 5-disc box, but I'm talking about the next two. The next two records are probably more in the vein of, we've already started recording them. They're more like, like Atreus, that sort of conceptual type of thing, big, grandiose works, very metal stuff. And this was like, we wanted to explore more of some of the blues nature of the group on these records and, other things that we don't always get a chance to do. We figured it's a box set. So with a box set, my feeling is go deep, go wide and explore, do the unexpected. Why do everything exactly the same as you always would? It is a box set after all.
Now, you had Gothic Voodoo Anthems, which is one of the CDs that was in this box set, and you really showed off the more classical side of your songwriting and, doing different versions of these songs, which I thought was interesting. And talk about the recording of that CD.
Sure, absolutely. That didn't exist in a vacuum. We've been doing these sort of stripped down performances for a long time. It's really started with me and Edward just doing his acoustic guitar. I play just a little piano in that show and just sing. And we've done all the songs that way. We've done quite a few shows, he and I, like that. And to be honest, he when we started doing all this stuff, we were also doing what's coming next, the next two records. So I was really overworking him, and he got a bit burnt for a while, so I didn't always have access to him. So I started doing these other sessions of jamming and whatnot with my friend Lynn Marie Del Mato. She's a keyboard player. I mean, I play keyboard, so it's you think it's odd. Why would I do that? But for some reason, we have a good chemistry, and I have a similar workflow like I have with Edward. So she and I started doing these kind of stripped down things where we would just go out with just her keyboard, my keyboard occasionally, and me singing. And the Gothic Voodoo Anthem is kind of like that and what I do with Edward, only on steroids, with more of the cellos and the bombastic orchestral drumming and stuff on there. So that album is essentially, most of it is our live set list, and then I added things like I Will Come For You that I just do myself, and a bunch of other things about Hammer of Zeus and whatnot, and a few other bits and pieces. So that's really why that album came about that way. And why those songs were chosen, I could have really chosen any of them. That's mostly a lot of that's the set list. But, I write all these songs on the piano. So, I'm always hearing them in that form originally, just my voice and the keyboard, or my voice and Edward's guitar and the keyboard when we work together on things. And, he and I always felt from years ago, that's why we started doing the acoustic things, that sometimes something got lost in translation when you start cranking up the amps and you start, you know, bringing all the drums and stuff in. You know, our music is not, it's not driven by those elements. It's driven by the songs themselves, the actual chord progressions, the harmonies and all that. And all that metal stuff is built into the songs as they're written. And then the other stuff is just kind of like cosmetics, if you will. You know, they're important, you know, and I love all that, and it's beautiful. But sometimes we always felt on some of the records, you know, some of the harmonic nature of what we were doing got a bit obscured. Because that's the nature when you're playing super loud. A lot of the more intricate harmonies get lost. That's why a lot of times the guitar is only doing root and fifth when it's really distorted. You know, you can't hear the four, five, six notes that are in the chords. You have to voice them out a different way. And we've discovered other ways of actually keeping that distorted and bombastic element in while and retaining that sense of harmony, and you'll get that on the next records as a whole nother approach to what we're doing now, which is going to be unleashed on the next few records. So it's been a journey. It's been a learning experience, the whole life from the first record to this, and I think I'm still learning, and we're still learning, and we're still jazzed up and very excited about what we're doing now and what's going to come next.
Well, you know, it's interesting. The Ghost Harvest album sounds a lot like, you know, the musical direction's a lot similar to Life Among the Ruins, which, you know, isn't the typical direction that you take, but, you know, you have obviously gone into that musical direction before. And talk about the Ghost Harvest album.
Yes. Yeah, absolutely. We explored it, and when we first put that album out, Life Among the Ruins, some, you know, the European fans were like, what's going on? You know, where's Noel Savage? Where's the Bring of Rome? But in America, everyone really liked it, and it was like, that was the first album that they actually liked from us. So it's... But we stand by that record. We stood by it then, and I stand by it today. Yeah, we grew up with that kind of bluesy stuff. We grew up with Led Zeppelin, and if you grew up with Led Sabbath, then you want to see what influenced them. So you discover Muddy Waters and Howlin' Wolf and Elmore James and, you know, Son House and all kinds of stuff. So it was like, you know, yeah, let's go back to that. I always loved the sensuality of the blues, and I love bringing that into the format of what we do. So it became this sort of gothic voodoo hybrid metal blues thing, you know. It's our own thing, you know.
Now, the reissues you have on here, you know, Book of Burning and Hymns to Victory were obviously compilations and re-recorded songs, and you also reissued these and made them part of the box set as well with some extra bonus stuff.
Yes. When I signed with SPV, the agreement was to reissue the entire catalog bit by bit. And as we started doing that, I kept adding more and more material to each of the reissues. So we thought, okay, those two records, Book and Victory, came out simultaneously. So we thought, let's do it again, but let's do one disc as a bonus disc in there. And that grew to two, and then it grew to three, and it could have gone to four. But we put the, you know, put the brakes on, and it became, you know, what it is. So that's everything is reissued now, and what will come next will be, you know, just brand new stuff for a while. I don't think we need to reissue anything. Well, maybe at some point, you know, I'd like to do the Blacklight Bacchanalia again, because I actually like to remix that record like I did Visions of Eden. Mm-hmm. And I may even re-record some sections of it, possibly, because it was very rushed at that when we did that record. And I love the songs, and I think I wanted to achieve a bit more with it, and maybe at some point, you know, time permitting, I will. But the focus really is the future and the next stuff. So, you know, we'll see.
You know, speaking of reissues, as I mentioned before the interview, I was able to finally buy all of the Virgin Steel reissue albums that came out a few years ago. And I have to ask you this. Age of Consent, I thought, was just a great record. And mentioned in the liner notes, you mentioned that the album really never received a ton of recognition and really wasn't promoted, and that even when you reissued it the first time, people thought it was a brand new album, yet it had been out for a number of years. And why do you think that record really didn't get the recognition that it deserved?
That's a good. Well, there's a few reasons. I think one was when we did Age of Consent, we actually had management. We had a manager, and he was not really aiding and abetting us. It was actually detrimental to our career at that moment. And by the time that album was done and ready to go, we started. I think we parted ways pretty much around when the album came out with him. And I don't think he really didn't do the right thing with it. I think he just wanted to just get it out there and whatever. And it was just some sort of a weird deal that was done for the record. It was just like a limited thing. And also, I always felt that the sequence was wrong. It shouldn't have opened up with On the Wings of the Night. You know, it should have opened up with The Burning of Rome. When I did the reissues, I resequenced the record and also added to it as well. So it was a little bit more like, you know, the follow-up to Noble Savage. Because, you know, at that moment, I guess everyone was looking for that big, you know, AM radio hit thing there. So, you know, I wrote Cry Forever that was on there. And we did Tragedy and a few of the other songs that were more, I don't know, I guess, quote-unquote commercial. I mean, now they don't sound like that to me, but at the time, I guess some people were like, you know, where's more of the Lion in Winter and that stuff on there. I mean, I was obviously still on there, but I don't know, so I think there's a few reasons that the record got sort of overlooked at that moment. And then, you know, we fired the management, and they had to build it back up again, so that was Life Among the Ruins, and then that was another record that in Europe they didn't quite always understand, but now, you know, people really dig it. It took a while. A lot of times when we release a record, it's sort of ahead of the curve. It's like even Visions of Eden, like 4 years later, people are coming up to me and saying, oh, it's your best record, it's the best thing we've ever done, and so on and so forth, but at the time, we're like, they didn't get it, you know, so... Mm-hmm. That happens, I think, you know, with some groups, and it definitely happens, you know, with us, and it happened with, you know, with the people we grew up with, like Zeppelin and Queen and whatever, so we're in good company, I guess.
And, you know, the classical influence that I brought up earlier in the interview, you can hear the start of that, you can hear a lot of that on Age of Consent.
Oh yeah, it's even there, I think, on from the first record, you know, in small increments, and things like Children of the Storm and the song Virgin Steel, and on Noble Savage, of course, that track, and The Angel of Light. You know, so it's always been there, and the blues element's been there, not always that prevalent, but it's been there. But after we did Life Among the Ruins, and we got a better deal going on for the Marriage Records, so we started, the infrastructure was more there in Europe, and we had the booking agency again in Europe that was going wild with us, and we did more shows, so those records were more promoted and whatnot, and everything started building up from that moment in time, I guess. Mm-hmm.
Now, it's interesting, you talked about Noble Savage, and, you know, you had two pretty strong releases to start the band's career off with a great guitar player like Jack Starr. But, you know, then you ended up obviously parting ways, and you ended up getting Edward Persino in the band. And I really think the band, you know, on its third album really did make a big leap, and it was a great record with him. And you've been with Edward ever since. And what's kept you guys together? And maybe talk about how you ended up recruiting him.
Sure. I knew Edward before I knew Jack. I knew Edward since I'm about 14, 15 years old. We were playing together before Virgin Steel. So it was inevitable that he and I would end up, you know, making records together and working the way we do. I was the first to launch. I got Virgin Steel, I got that going with the other three guys, and we put the first album out, and things started, you know, going very well for us, and he was still doing, like, you know, the local club gig, you know, or, you know, the high school dance, that sort of stuff. So he was watching, and he was always around. He'd come around, he'd watch what we did, he'd come to the gigs and whatnot. He was always hanging around with us. And at one point, we actually tried to have him in two guitars, Jack and Edward, but Jack, you know, he wasn't really that kind of guy at that moment in time. He didn't really want to be sort of a team guy and share the wealth, so to speak. He wanted to be the, you know, the guitar hero guy and all that. Mm-hmm. So it didn't really work out. But I clearly remember having Edward come down. He learned all the songs we asked him to learn, and I remember playing, and it was loud as shit. It was amazing, but it didn't quite work out. We knew, me, Joey, and Joe O, the other guys from the early days, we knew that, you know, our time with Jack was limited. It was going to end. We had various issues with him and whatnot, and he started doing this solo record with Rhett Forrester, who I liked very much, a nice guy. I actually sang background vocals on that record. It's not credited, but I was on that record. So we thought, well, all right, he's got a solo career going. Let him go do that. We want to work with Edward. So as he was doing that, we brought Edward over. And actually, he was always over. He had his amp at my house anyway. So I showed him Noble Savage. I showed him Angel of Light. And we started, you know, rehearsing that stuff. And he and I wrote Evil in a Rise, Obsession, and whatnot. And it felt really good. So we said to Jack, look, we want to continue with Edward. Why don't you, you know, carry on with Red? And, you know, it'll all be friendly. And, you know, of course, it wasn't very friendly. Was not happy with that at the moment, but after, I don't know, a year or so, we kind of smoothed things over, and I actually worked with Jack again in a project called Smokestack Lightning, which was just it was a bluesy metal thing. It was I was like 1990. It was a very young drummer, good guy. Oh, Christ, can't remember his name right now. And the bass player from Foghat, Craig McGregor. Keith Sabrowski, that's the name of the drummer, Keith Sabrowski, yeah, and that was a cool band. We never recorded anything, just some live cassettes floating around, that's about it. And then I also worked with Jack again on some other tracks. I ended up producing one of his records, No Turning Back, so, you know, we kind of buried the hatchet, so to speak. And yeah, like I said, we continued with Edward, and it worked, because I knew it was going to work, and as I said, Edward and I had this great chemistry, and it was there long before the first Virgin Steel album, you know. We used to have the Zeppelin jams in my parents' basement. He'd come down, and, you know, we'd play Zeppelin and Queen and Purple. His brother would play drums and whatnot. We'd invite all the neighborhood girls in and go insane, you know, jamming all night.
Now, my favorite works by you as a musician have always been a lot of the concept albums, like, you know, the House of Atreus, Invictus, Marriage of Heaven and Hell. And, you know, I've always thought, you know, you reissued House of Atreus Part 1 and 2 as a, you know, one album, and or a triple album, as you want to call it. And I really think it should have been released like that instead of, you know, the two separate records that came out.
Yeah, it should have been. Rock, so do I. I really wanted that, but the label didn't want that at the time, and the second one wasn't fully finished recording-wise. We would have had to wait a bit, you know, another month or whatever it would have been, you know. But yeah, I would have loved that, absolutely.
Now, can you give us any info on the next album and any indication of what that's going to entail?
Yes. One of them will be sort of like, you're going to think it's some sort of ancient Greek epic tale, and in one sense it is, but I'm actually talking about something else simultaneously, which is a bit more personal. So that, yeah, I can divulge that. The other one, that's not a double album. That's a good long 70 some odd minute record, though, like Invictus. And it's very dramatic, very, very heavy duty, very metal, very classical as well. So if you like those records, yeah, it fits in well with the Marriage and the Atreus stuff. The other record is also in a similar vein, but it's a bit more, I guess for lack of a better word at the moment, it's more autumnal, you know, that sort of, it's a little more, it's darker in a different way, I guess. It's probably a double album, that one, right now. It is actually a double album as we speak. And I won't put it out as part one, part two. I refuse. This is going to come out, you know, all together. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I don't want to do that. I don't want it to drag on. I want it to, boom, there it is, full shot. If you love it, great. If you don't, okay, wait for the next one.
Now, I'm a big fan of concept albums, David, and I've always loved the rock opera type thing. You know, it's been, you know, it's something in music that when it's done right, it's great. And there's so many bands out there that have done something like that, and I truly love it. And when you put out a concept album, do you think it alienates some of the fan base out there? Do you think that people tend to not be able to get into stuff like this when you do these concept albums, and as opposed to, say, just a straight up record?
Yeah, there is that, and you know that's those records, especially the marriage records, they were done in a very specific way where you could extract any of those songs from the marriage or Invictus, and it still, you know, it exists on its own merits. You know, it wasn't like you had to know what was going on and follow it step by step. The Atreus record, it's a bit more, it's a bit more connected in that you might want to know what's going on, see where you are in the opera, so to speak. But again, you can pull out, you know, Through the Ring of Fire, you can pull out Kingdom of the Fearless and just deal with it on its own merits as what it is, you know. So I always try to work that way. And also when I'm writing these things that are, you know, they, even the Atreus record, yes, there is that Greek drama going on, but I'm also talking about other things in there that are more personally relevant. But I don't really like to discuss so much about what those songs mean to me, so that the listener can see themselves in there, especially on, well, this Ghost Harvest stuff is all reality based. It's all about, you know, what's gone on for me in the past year and or mm-hmm. whatever, you know. So, and I could sit there and tell you referrals about or this, that, and the other thing. But, you know, and some people want to know. Other people would rather just, you know, imagine what they want. I had this big interview last week with somebody who had this whole concept about what their album was about. It was not at all what I intended, but it worked for them. And I was like, yeah, if that works for you, then that's what it's about for you. Why not?
Now, it's interesting because when I listened to this Ghost Harvest stuff, you know, it almost has the same vibe as some of the bonus content on the bonus discs of these reissues that you've put out.
I try to be faithful to the mood, the emotion, you know, of whatever the original record was. So on a thing like Age of Consent, I think, you know, when we first put it out, we hated Perfect Mansions. And that, for me, was like the sequel to The Burning of Rome kind of thing. So I tried to keep that mood going in. And even when we did it again, and I tried to put the other tracks on there, Under the Graveyard Moon record, I tried to keep some of the spirit of what the record was. The overall, you know, mood of that. With the seen through the eyes of now, you know, because I think it's dishonest to go back and say, okay, I'm exactly the same person I was, you know, 20 years ago, or whatever, when the record came out. You know, you're always evolving and growing and whatnot. So that's why some people ask, you know, is there ever going to be another Noble Savage like that, whatever? Yeah, if it comes out naturally, organically, sure, why not, you know? But I'm not going to go in there and try to recreate that record or anything like that record, as an exercise to do it, because it wouldn't be honest. You know, it's got to come from a place of, you know, where you are at any point in time, you know?
So when do you plan on putting out your next album?
I definitely want to get one of them out next year.
Okay.
If they're both ready for next year, I'd be delighted to put both of them out next year, you know? But I definitely want to have one out next year. Yeah, we're about 40 to 50, maybe 60% done with those records. There's still a large amount of things. Of course, if the recording's done, you got to mix it, master it. That's a whole other kettle fish. But
right.
Recordings go. We're pretty deep into the recording as we speak.
Now, this whole Ghost Harvest concept album, much different lyrically, obviously, than what you normally do. You know, what was this concept album about?
As I mentioned a moment ago, a lot of it is particularly personal to my existence. You know, mm-hmm. songs like Seven Dead Within, Green Dead, all that stuff. Feral, Murder, High Ghost Relief. Those are about things that I've gone through. It's if you read the lyrics, it's not very uplifting, happy music, you know, lyrically speaking.
Right.
But it is real. If you want to know, I can tell you what Feral is about. And Justine, that concerns with that. Some of that concerns. Well, I've known a lot of women. A lot of my girlfriends have. A lot of the women in my life have been molested by their fathers or whatever, or uncles, or that kind of a thing. There's mm-hmm. some of that going on in those songs. Some of them family members have committed suicide because of such situations, that kind of thing. So some of that is in there. Just, you know, and, I mean, that's enough probably to you know,
right,
the lyrics with that filter. I'd rather not divulge so much. But yeah, there's a real undercurrent of that malevolence in there of things. It's most of the records deal with, I guess, anti-authority, the forbidden, the so-called forbidden, as I call it, you know, relationships that some people think you're not supposed to have, but, you know, this is nature, and this is human nature, and, you know, Cupid enslaves what he will, you know, so to speak. That's a line in Feral, you know.
Mm-hmm.
You can draw your own conclusions.
So basically what you're telling me is that you took a step back from the more epic stuff and went more for the human element and everything.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, and like, as I said, that's always been in there, and the marriage and other things as well. But it's a lot more obvious now. And we never were one of those bands that really wanted to, you know, be like the Lord of the Rings and talk about wizards and elves and all that. Not that there's anything wrong with that. And bands, a lot of guys do that really well, guys and gals. But that was never our thing. And I think, you know, if you're gonna be a writer and you're gonna continue writing songs over long periods, you've got to be true to what's going on. You got to use the material that your life is, and it's and for me, it's a way of exercising those demons, I guess you could say, you know. Because if you don't get them out in some way, they come out in other ways, you know.
Mm-hmm.
If you don't,
yeah.
As an artist, it works. Painters do it, sculptors do it, musicians do it. You know, we all do it. So, Life Among the Ruins was like that. That was a very personal record of what I was going through at that moment. So, yeah, it's all similar in that it's relationship based. Even Nocturnes was like that as well. That's, you know, a lot of those songs have to do with what was going on with me, with the group. People in our orbit.
So I'm coming out and telling you right now, the orchestrated version of Kingdom of the Fearless I thought was amazing. And have you had anybody else come to you and compliment you on some of the re-recorded versions of these songs, you know, the orchestrated versions of some of your other songs?
I no one jumped out with that. What you just said, I'm honored. I say, yeah, you made my day. That's, thank you.
Mm-hmm.
That's beautiful. I'm very pleased. Yeah, I mean, I when I wrote that on the piano. It was just the piano and the vocal. And I in my brain, I heard in my inner ear, I heard the rest of it, and I showed Edward. He came over, and three instruments, two people, his guitar, my piano, and vocal, and we recorded it on cassette. And because that's how we always work, I record everything on the cassette first, and then once I know that there is a song there, then go into the studio and record it for real. So yeah, so to strip it back, you know, get rid of the distorted Marshalls and all that stuff, and just bring it back to the vocal and the some cellos and whatever cue what's going on and the orchestral drums was really rewarding to do that on that one and all those songs. So
right.
And I thought, well, if it worked, you know, if I got jazzed up and excited, you know, when I wrote it that way, why wouldn't it work again? So yeah, it seems like it does, you know, for me and for yourself and hopefully other people as well.
Hey, David, and one more last question I have for you, sir, is, you know, any last words to the fans that are going to be checking out this interview on my radio show?
Thanks for listening. Thanks for being around and part of this Verdant Steel experience for all these years. Or if you're just coming on board, welcome on board now. And cheers, and here's a salute for the next 4,000 years or however long, you know, our time remains on the planet. You know, we're going for it while we're here. The whole thing is about passion, drive, energy, capturing life as we live it, and trying to, you know, jam as much of the emotion of life and all its drama, the good, the bad, and the ugly, into the songs. And that's what we're trying to do. And if that's what you want to hear in your music, then this one's for you.